Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to this presentation for the SREC Base Financing Program. During the presentation, all phone lines will be in listen-only mode. At the end of the presentation, we will announce the opportunity for listeners to ask questions. Instructions will be given at that time. This presentation will be recorded and an archived playback will be made available. The Q&A portion of this conference call will be posted as FAQs on the website, but will not be recorded. If you need any assistance during this call, please press star zero and someone will help you. At this time, I will turn the call over to Benjamin Chi of NERA Economic Consulting.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, Happy New Year, and thank you for coming to this call for the SREC-based financing program. Together with me on this call is Dr. Chantal Lacasse, who is also with NERA. NERA is the RFP manager, the solicitation manager that manages this RFP process for the SREC-based financing program. This program is for the three New Jersey EDCs, or electric distribution companies, and they are Atlantic City Electric Company, Jersey Central Power and Light Company, and Rockland Electric Company. A couple of quick introductions here. We have on this call as well representatives from the EDCs to help us answer some of the questions after the presentation portion of this call. And from Jersey Central Power and Light, or JCP&L, we have Mr. Gary Pleiss as well as Mr. Tom Donadio. From Atlantic City Electric, or ACE, we have Mr. Rob Reuter as well as Mr. Josh Caterat. And from Rockland Electric Company, or RECO, we have Mr. Scott Markworth. We'll start the presentation on slide 2 with a couple of reminders and one disclaimer. So the first reminder is that there is a dedicated website for this RFP, and that is the central source of information for this SREC-based financing program. The website address is one word, njedcsolar.com, NJ for New Jersey, EDC for the electric distribution companies, and solar for this SREC-based financing program. This SREC-based financing program came out of a settlement and a proceeding before the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities. All the governing documents, as well as documents related to this RFP or this program, they're all posted on the RFP website. The RFP rules as well as the forms have been updated as of January 6th of this year. There are a couple of governing documents, and we'll name three of them here for you. That's on the second bullet on slide 2. The governing documents are, first, the request for proposal under this SREC-based financing program, or the RFP rules. This RFP rules document will describe the conduct of this procurement process. There is a standard contract that is used under this program. This is known as the SREC Purchase and Sale Agreement, or SREC PSA, and I will talk a little bit more about this later on. This is also one of the governing documents in this RFP. And certainly, all the decisions and orders related to this program by the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities, or BPU, are also part of the governing documents. Again, all governing documents are posted to the RFP website. And here is the disclaimer. In our presentation, we will make statements that describe or refer to some of these documents or agreements. These statements are summaries only and are qualified in their entirety by our references to such documents or agreements. In terms of what we'd like to accomplish today, we're on to slide 3. We have an agenda printed out on that slide. The first half of this call, covering the first 4 items that you see there, will cover some general information about the SREC-based financing program. We'll talk about the overview, about the planned quantities for this upcoming solicitation, about some of the changes that are new in this RFP that we're introducing in this solicitation, as well as general eligibility requirements. Item number 5 And six, we'll move into the practical aspects of this RFP. We'll explain to you that the RFP is going to be in three steps and what these three steps are about. And we will then close off this time with a description of the evaluation process and the steps towards awards, as well as the results from the prior rounds. We'll have a time for questions at the end. On slide 4, at a very high level, what this program is about and what it is not about is listed here on slide 4. First, very importantly, the SREC-based financing program is not a loan program. This program is for the purchase of solar renewable energy certificates, or SRECs, and for the purchase of SRECs only. The EDCs are not purchasing the energy or the capacity from your solar projects. What this program is designed to do is to offer you a chance to enter into these long-term contracts with the EDCs, ACE, JCP&L, and WECO, and thereby, with these long-term contracts, provide you the reasonable assurances you need regarding the price as well as the potential revenues that could result from your financing elsewhere with that contract. As I've mentioned before, this program came out of a settlement before the Board of Public Utilities. The program rules are consistent with the stipulation as well as the board order, or board orders related to this program. And these stipulations as well as board orders can be found on the RFP website. The stipulations themselves will describe the elements of the procurement process. We highlight for you three of them here at the bottom of slide 4. First, when we say that this is a chance for you to enter into the long-term contracts with EDCs, when we say long-term, what we mean here is that this program envisions to award contracts of between 10 and 15 years, which you will name in your pricing proposals. It is also anticipated that this program will run for 3 years, and here we are talking about an RPS year which runs from June 1st through May 31st of the subsequent year. In each RPS year, we envision there to be 3 solicitations held per year. We are in round 6, or the third solicitation, in RPS year 2011. And the last element that we're highlighting here for you is that, at a minimum, this program envisions that projects that are put for consideration for an award have, at a minimum, completed an initial application process with one of 2 state programs, either the REIP, the Renewable Energy Incentive Program, or the SRP, the SREC Registration Program. A couple of key changes to the program in this round number 6. We are on to slide 5, and here we highlight for you a couple of them. The parties to this settlement has issued a stipulation that was approved by the board very recently. Those changes, as well as certain administrative changes, have been implemented in this upcoming round. So 4 of the changes are listed here at the bottom of slide 5. The first change is a substantive change. The eligible project size under this program has been changed from 500 kilowatts to 2 megawatts at this time. So to be eligible under this program, the DC rating of your solar system cannot exceed 2 megawatts. There has also been a couple of administrative changes. First is that there has been a simplification to the submission of Appendix C, which I will explain later when we talk about the qualification requirements. In the past, we have required Appendix C, or the host acknowledgement form, which is one of the requirements to be provided in pre-signed originals during the qualification stage. At this point, we are only requiring one PDF copy to be provided during the qualification stage. Another administrative change is that the EDCs will now, upon the approval of awards and issuance of a board order, shortly thereafter provide to winning bidders a draft of the SREC PSA. This is provided for the convenience of bidders. In the past, this SREC PSA is only provided after the appeal period for the board order is final. And this draft SREC PSA is now provided earlier in the process. And Dr. Chantal Lacasse will explain some of these details later on in the presentation. One other change is that the program now allows for constructed project size to differ by no more than 10% from the project size as submitted in the pricing proposals. This is a change that is implemented in this upcoming round, and there will be some details that we will go into later on in the presentation as well. Over on to slide 6, we talk about the planned target quantities under this program. As mentioned earlier, this program is envisioned to run for 3 years with a total of 9 solicitations. And in total, the program targets to procure no more than 64 megawatts over this 3-year period. And this 64 megawatts is roughly allocated between or among the EDCs, with 19 megawatts for ACE, 42 megawatts for JCP&L, and about 3.7 megawatts for RICO. You'll see a box in the or a table in the middle of slide 6. Here are the planned quantities for this upcoming round, the February 2011 solicitation or round 6, with roughly a little under 12 megawatts for projects in ACE territory, a little under 6 megawatts in the JCP&L territory, and about 2.4 megawatts for projects in RICO's territory. These numbers reflect quantities that have not been filled either in the RPS 2010 year as well as the quantities that were planned in the first two solicitations of RPS 2011 but were not filled. And in general, planned quantities may or may not receive an award in a solicitation based on an assessment of the competitiveness of pricing. For instance, if your pricing is not competitive, your project may not receive an award. There is a standard contract used under this program, as mentioned earlier. This is known as the SREC Purchase and Sale Agreement. We are on to slide 7. Applicants to this program must agree to the terms of this standard SREC Purchase and Sale Agreement, or SREC PSA. Here we highlight for you in the third bullet on this slide a couple of the elements or terms under this SREC PSA. The SREC PSA will require you to agree to an inspection by a verification agent by the New Jersey Office of Clean Energy, and this will be paid for by the project. The contract will require that you agree to a utility or EDC meter to measure the gross output from the project, and this will be paid for by the project. We'll also ask you to agree to a refundable cash deposit, and this is required of you within 14 days of the BPU approval of the award. In general, as I have said, this cash deposit is refundable, meaning you will get this cash deposit back, but you may not get it back. For instance, if you do not enter into the SREC PSA for a project, if it has been approved for an award, you may not get the money back as well if you have received the award, executed the award, but the project has not produced or generated an SREC within a year from when the contract was executed. And in the as part of your pricing proposal, we went to bullet number one of that slide seven, you'll be asked to name two things. First is the duration of the contract, meaning how long you want to sell your SRECs to the EDCs. And this must be between 10 and 15 years. And the second thing that you will name in your pricing proposal is the price. And this is a constant price over the life of the agreement, meaning how much you want to get paid for each SREC that you transfer to the EDC's account. So both items, once you have received an award and have executed the contract, the duration as well as the price will be specified in your contract. And under the contract, you will be paid on a quarterly basis after the SRECs have been created, have been tracked by PJM GAT, the Generation Attribute Tracking System, and has been transferred to the EDC's account. Over on to slide 8, we cover some of the eligibility requirements here. This slide is broken up into two portions. One is the eligibility requirements, as well as on the right side of this slide, some of the items that would cause your project to be ineligible. So we'll go through some of these items on the eligible side first. So first thing to note, it doesn't matter whether your project is a residential project or a commercial project. Both residential as well as commercial projects are eligible as long as they physically reside in one of the three EDC service territory, either in ACE, JCP&L, or Rockland Electric's service territory. It does not matter if it is the customer that owns the premise on which the project resides or the developer that installs the solar system that submits the proposal. Either party should be able to submit a proposal for that project under this program. There is a size requirement. As mentioned earlier, this size requirement has increased from 500 kilowatts to 2 megawatts. And just to reiterate one of the points of the stipulation is that your DC rating of the solar system must be below 2,000 or at or below 2,000 megawatts, or 2 megawatts or 2,000 kilowatts. If you're providing a proposal for a portion of that system and that portion is less than 2 megawatts, but in aggregate the entire system is more than 2 megawatts, then that project is no longer eligible for this program. At the bottom of slide 8, on the positive side, we have the question about at what stage must your project be in to be eligible to participate in this program. And there are two criteria that are used here. The first is that the project must at the minimum have cleared the initial application process with one of two state programs, either the REIP or the SREC registration program. And the second criteria is that it must not have been so developed to the point that the project has already requested final interconnection before the Board of Public Utilities have issued its decision regarding the approval of bids for that solicitation. And as and when it gets interconnected, it must not be interconnected at transmission voltages. On the ineligible side, there are a couple at the bottom of slide 8 that talks about or are related to the SREC PSA, the standard contract. If you do not agree to the terms of the SREC PSA, certainly your project will be ineligible for consideration. And some of the terms of the SREC PSA requires that you agree to the net metering arrangements with the EDC, as well as agree to the installation of the SREC meter at the project's expense. And one last item on the ineligible side is that if your project has received or will receive rebates from the core program that is in force between 2001 and 2008, that project is also ineligible to be considered under this program. Over on to slide 9, here are a couple of updates for you on a related program. As I've mentioned earlier, that in order for you to participate in our program, the project must at least have cleared one of two state programs, the REIP, the Renewable Energy Incentive Program, or the SRP, the SREC Registration Program. At this point in time, the REIP applications are no longer accepted by the NJCEP, the New Jersey Clean Energy Program. And I'll tell you what this does not mean and what this means. If you have a project that has been accepted under the REIP in 2010, your project is still eligible to participate in our program. In general, if you have a project that has received an REIP approval, that is eligible to participate in our program. What we are saying here is that from the NJCEP's side, they are just no longer issuing these rebates under the REIP applications. And currently, only applications under the SRP, the SREC registration program, are considered. It is our understanding from the New Jersey CEP Clean Energy Program that in order to obtain a NJCEP application number for a project in time for this upcoming round 6, the February 2011 solicitation on our program, you must provide to them, the NJCEP, a complete SRP packet by February 4th. And very importantly, on top of that, in order for them, NJCEP, to provide you with a NJCEP application number, they need to prioritize your SRP applications for expedited approval. And for them to know how to do that, they are requesting and asking that for residential projects up to 10 kilowatts or non-profit and public projects up to 50 kilowatts that you submit with your complete SRP application, what they call an ESFI Notice of Intent to Participate form. And for all other projects, that you include a cover letter with your complete SRP packet, and in your cover letter to indicate that you intend to participate in the SREC-based financing program. This will allow them to prioritize your SRP application for expedited approval. Again, this SRP application must be provided to them no later than February 4th in order to meet the requirements under our program. Over on to slide 10. Just a reminder here again, here you find a screenshot of the dedicated RFP website. This is what it will look like. This is a screenshot of the documents page of the RFP website. As I mentioned earlier, all RFP documents are available on our website. Website address again is njedcsolar.com. If you are looking at documents about this program on another website, you are in the wrong place. This is the only place you should be looking at for information regarding the SREC-based financing program. On this documents page, I will highlight for you one thing, which is that there is a program guide that has been updated. This was posted on January 6th. You'll find that as the first link on this page. This is a 4-page summary of the program. If you do not have much time to go over the program details or the RFP rules at this time and you need something to get you started, this is the document that you want to review. Two other things to highlight for you. We have an FAQ process and there is an FAQ page. If you look at the top navigation bar, if you click on the FAQ link, all questions as well as answers that are relevant to this SREC-based financing program are listed or posted to the RFP website under that FAQs page. All questions that we will receive as well as responses given after this call will also be provided as FAQs on that page. In general, any question asked by bidders that we have responded to that are still relevant will be posted on that page. The second thing that I will highlight to you is that there is a way to get on the distribution list of the website. If you're not on the distribution list already, I cannot encourage you enough to register yourself to receive announcements. And you do that by clicking on the Contact Us page. There should be a link that says register to receive email updates and alerts. It takes 30 seconds to fill the form up, and it will put you on that distribution list to receive email alerts and announcements on a going forward basis. We're now on to slide 11, and here I'm going to shift gears in this section and go into detail about the practical aspects of this program and the steps you'll need to take to submit a proposal under the program. So in each solicitation, there are three solicitations in a given RPS here. In each solicitation, we expect there to be these three common steps. The first step in this round is known as the expression of interest that you'll need to submit to us, and that is due to us by noon on Friday, February 11. The second step is where you provide to us the actual bids, or what we call the pricing proposal. And the third step, along with the pricing proposal, is for you to provide to us qualification materials. I'll go into detail as to what the requirements are. The pricing proposal, as well as the qualification packet, is due to us by noon on February 17. Over on to slide 12, we'll start with step one, the submission of the expression of interest. So first thing to note is that this is a simple form that you can download from our website. This is Appendix 2 to the RFP. You download this form, fill out the form, and then email that to us to the email address njsolar@nira.com. In the expression of interest, we'll ask for a couple of basic things. First, as I've mentioned a couple of times, that your project must at least have cleared one of two state programs, either the REIP or the SRP. At the end of that application process, the NJCEP will provide to you what we call a NJCEP application number. In the expression of interest, we will ask you for that NJCEP number for the project that you're submitting for consideration. The expression of interest form will also ask you to provide a point of contact and allows you to provide up to two representatives, one representative and one alternate representative, to receive information regarding your proposal. Very importantly, how we communicate to bidders is typically by email, and we will ask that you provide an email address that works in your expression of interest. In general, one EOI is required per project. So if you are a developer with multiple projects and you own multiple projects, you can submit a proposal for each of those projects, and we are requiring that you provide one EOI for each such project that you are submitting in this round. The deadline again is February 11 at noon, and here at the bottom of slide 12, we encourage you to submit your EOIs early. The deadline, while it's at noon at February 11, you need not submit that at the deadline, but we do encourage you, certainly, if you can, to submit that earlier before the deadline. This provides you time to resolve any inconsistency, but very importantly, it helps identify you as a bidder so that we can stand ready to assist you throughout the remainder of this procurement process. So on slide 12 here, we talk about what you need to do to submit an EOI by downloading the form, submitting it online or via email to us. On slide 13 here, we will go over the things that we will do once we receive a complete EOI from you. So how this works is that we will review the EOI that we receive. Most of the time, if it's deficient, it's deficient because it's missing a NJCEP number. But if that is provided and the contact information for the representatives are complete then we will consider that a complete EOI. If your EOI is complete, we will then send back to you three things. One, instructions for the submission of your pricing proposal or your bids. Two, a password for you to access the file transfer system so that you know how to submit your bids, as well as a bid form or the actual pricing proposal spreadsheet that is in an Excel format. And we'll go over some of the details of these items on the next slide. In general, if you're a bidder with multiple projects, we will send one set of instructions to you and one password so that you can access the file transfer system. However, for each project, we will provide you a customized bid form that is associated with that project. Again, the deadline for the EOI is noon, February 11th, and if your EOI is deficient, if you have submitted an EOI but you're still awaiting for your NJCEP number to be received or provided by the NJCEP, then that will be deficient, but you will have time to cure that deficiency as long as it's cured by the cure deficiency deadline of 5 p.m. on February 16. So just two takeaways from here. First is that there is no need to wait until the deadline to submit your EOI. If you have a project that you're considering to submit a proposal for in this upcoming round and you have submitted your SRP application to the NJCEP and you're awaiting the number, submit your EOI to us today. We will identify you as a bidder and help you through the process. If you already have an REIP number or an SRP number and you're ready to go with your EOI, submit that EOI to us today and we will be able to identify you as a bidder and help you through the remainder of the process. The second takeaway is very costly for you if you miss the deadline. If you miss the noon deadline on February 11 to submit your EOI, you will not be able to proceed forward in this solicitation process. And we will not be able to help you even if we want to at that point in time. So that is step one, the submission of the EOI. We'll move on to slide 14, which is step two, the pricing proposal or the bids themselves. Two takeaways from this slide. First is that bids under this program or the pricing proposals under this program are submitted using the bid form. And the second takeaway is that the bid forms are submitted using a file transfer system. And we list here for you the three steps of submitting a pricing proposal through the file transfer system. The first step is for you to complete the bid form. On that customized bid form that we will provide to you upon receipt of a complete EOI, the bid form would have already been locked in with your NJCEP number. You will then need to provide to us a price, that's a single constant price for how much you want to get paid for your SRACs throughout the term of the SRAC PSA. And the second item is that you need to provide to us the duration of the contract, which must be between 10 and 15 years. We'll also ask that you provide us the size of your project. That must be rounded to the third decimal place and must be consistent and exactly the same as the size as approved by NJCEP in your REIP or SRP acceptance letter that you get from the Office of Clean Energy. And with that, we'll also ask that you indicate to us which EDC territory your project resides in, whether it's in ACE, JCTNL, or RICO's service territory. Step two is for you to access the file transfer system and to submit your bid forms there. The file transfer system works very much like a web-based email system. It's not more complicated than that. If you look to the right of slide 14, there's a screenshot there. The username is the email address that you provided to us when you submit your EOI. The password is provided to you when we send out the instructions to access the file transfer system as well as the bid forms when you receive those from us. The third step, of course, is to attach your bid forms under that web-based email platform and hit send. And that's as simple as that. You will receive a confirmation page from the file transfer system. The official confirmation will be by phone from the solicitation manager team. Over on to slide 15, I'll tell you a little bit about how this process works. When we receive a bid form on any given day, we will assess whether the bid form is compliant with the requirements of program rules or not. If it is compliant, I guess whether it is compliant or whether it is not compliant, we will confirm receipt of the bid form with you generally on the same business day if your bids are received prior to the noon deadline on February 17. If it is received on the bid day itself between the times of 9 a.m. and 12 noon, we will generally confirm receipt of your bid forms within 13 minutes when we receive that. And if your bid forms or the pricing proposal is not complete, we will certainly allow you to resubmit your pricing proposal through the same process, but you need to do so before the deadline of noon, February 17. So with that, we do encourage you to submit your bid forms as early as you can once you receive the bid forms from us. That is when your EOI is complete. At that point in time, you receive a bid form from us, and you can submit that at any point in time until the noon deadline on February 17. Again, don't wait for the deadline, but if you can, submit that earlier so that you afford yourself some time to resolve any issues or inconsistency. So we talked about step one, the submission of EOI, step two, the submission of your pricing proposal, and step three, on slide 16, we talk about the qualification packet. So there are four forms generally that are required, either three or four forms that are required from each participant, and we'll highlight them for you. I shouldn't say forms, I should say four items rather. So the four items are the certification and checklist for qualification. This is provided as Appendix 5 to the RFP rules. We need three originals of this. This is found in bullet number 1. We'll need what we call a project proposal summary sheet, which is found as Appendix number 4 to the RFP. This is found on bullet number 2. And in some cases, we'll need what we call Appendix C to the SREC PSA or a host acknowledgement form. Again, that's found in bullet number 2. And the last item, the fourth item that we will require for your qualification packet in general to be complete is the application materials that you have submitted to the NJCEP when you submitted that under the REIP or the SRP, the SREC registration program. We'll need one set of all the materials from there as well, including the acceptance letter. So these are the four items. So let's go through them in a little bit of detail here. The first item, the certification and checklist for the qualifications, that's found in bullet number 1. Here, what we'll require from you is that the owner of the SREC system or the solar system be able to certify that you agree with all the terms of the SREC PSA as well as the RFP. There will be also a customer acknowledgement for your customer to sign acknowledging that they will agree to the net metering arrangements under the contract. Three originals duly signed and completed must be provided to us for this particular requirement. Over on to bullet number 2, we have these. The first item, which is the project proposal summary sheet. On that form, all you need to do is to provide us information regarding your project, identify for us the various parties to the project, the developer, the customer, the host, meaning the owner of the premise of facility on which the project resides, as well as the owner of the project itself. And this must be filled out in MS Word format and provided to us via email to the email address njsolar@nero.com. The third item is not required from everyone, but is only required in the specific instance where the owner of the solar project is not the same individual or entity as the owner of the facility or the premise on which the project resides, what we call the host. If the owner of the solar project is not the same as the host, you will be required to get an acknowledgement from the host. And this is known as Appendix C to the SREC PSA or the host acknowledgement signed by the host. One thing to flag for you is that if this is required in your circumstance, at this stage in the RFP, we require only one PDF of the host acknowledgement form or Appendix C to be provided to us with your qualification packet. You can email that to us at njsolar@nera.com. In the past, we have required three originals of this post acknowledgement, but at this point, again, this is a change in the program rules administratively, so that we will only be requiring a signed PDF copy of the Appendix C. You will still need to provide the three originals, but you will only do so upon contract execution or at the time of contract execution when your bids have been approved by the Board of Public Utilities. One other thing about the Appendix C is that upon request, the solicitation manager team also stands ready to prepare the Appendix C for you based on information that you provide in your project proposal summary sheet. As long as the request is submitted to us before the EOI deadline of February 11. So we have gone through three of the four items. These three items, the certification and checklist, the project proposal summary sheet, as well as the host acknowledgement form, Appendix C, they are all forms posted to our website. All you need to do is to download them, fill them out, complete them, sign them, and send them to us. The certification and checklist must be provided to us in hard copy. The other two requirements can be sent to us electronically. And then one last item, which is the application materials from the REIP or SRP, that set of documents must be provided to us in hard copy as well. And all of these must reach us by the deadline on February 17 at noon when this is due. Over on to slide 17. So you know how this thing works. So the solicitation manager will only review the qualification packet after the bids are ranked. So once you provide that qualification packet to us, if it is before the noon deadline on the day when the pricing proposal as well as the qualification materials are due, we will send you a notice of receipt, but we will not provide you our assessment of whether the qualification packets are complete or not. We will issue you a deficiency notice or a complete notice by 6 p.m. on the next day after the due date, which is on February 18, that Friday. And if your packet is incomplete, for instance, if there are missing information in your project proposal summary sheet, or if your certification and checklist is missing a signature either by the owner of the project or from the customer, you will have time to resolve these inconsistencies as long as it is cured and the original documents reach us by the cure deficiency deadline of 4 p.m. on February 25th. So I guess the big takeaway here is that you will have time to cure any deficiencies in your qualification packet, but the representatives that is our point of contact for this SREC program should not go on vacation during this time between February 17 and February 25th in case there are deficiencies that require you to resolve promptly regarding your qualification packet. And with that, I will turn this time over to Dr. Chantal Lacasse, who will go over with you the bid evaluation process as well as the post-bid process.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you. So I'll proceed to go where Mr. Chiz left off in the presentation. So once your proposals have been submitted to us and that you have clarified, if need be, your qualifications and completed the EOI and the pricing proposal, then we will proceed to the evaluation of the proposal and specifically to the ranking of the bids. The ranking of the bids are done on a single metric, on a single number, which is the net present value, specifically the net present value of payments under the SREC PSA, the contract with EDC, for each annually delivered SREC. I should mention at the outset that the ranking of the proposal is done on an anonymous basis, and I'll explain in the next slide and the next couple of slides more precisely with an example how this net present value is calculated and how it relates precisely to the price bid that you're including in the pricing proposal. So we rank the bids according to the net present value, or NPV, and projects will be selected on the basis of the NPV, namely the lowest NPVs will be selected first. And the projects are selected up to the approved megawatt solicited or the planned quantity for this solicitation that we provided in a previous slide, or up to the point where the pricing is no longer competitive. So the first project that's going to be rejected is either the one that causes the total quantity selected to exceed the planned quantity, or the first project where the pricing is no longer competitive, whichever comes first. Once the projects are ranked in this way, according to the NPV, there's an additional step, which is to apply the developer cap. The developer cap does not apply to all the EDCs. It only applies to JCP&L and ACE. And the developer cap is set at 20% for each developer. For RICO, the only constraints of that type is an affiliate cap that's set at 50% and applies to the ranked project. There's more information on this developer cap on slide 19. The first point is that it applies to the planned quantities for the year. So those planned quantities that we've provided for this solicitation in a previous slide. And that has been clarified by one of the decisions issued by the board last year in connection with the program. The developer cap applies to developers, but to be a little bit more precise than that, is to ensure that there's no one entity, one developer, or no combination of affiliated entities under the same majority ownership that obtains more than 20% of the EDC's long-term contracts for any given year. Again, that applies to JCP&L and ACE only. So for the reporting year 2011, if we think about the entire quantity that is being procured during that year, which includes rollover quantities from 2010 that had not been filled under the program, and if we take 20% of that, those numbers are 3.6 megawatts for JCP&L and 2.5 megawatts for ACE. So that's roughly the developer cap, but a developer or a combination of affiliated entities under the same majority ownership can go a little bit over that. So the exact rule is that a developer or a group of affiliated entities under the same ownership cannot exceed that developer cap, 3.6 megawatts for JCP&L, 2.5 megawatts for ACE, by more than either 150 kilowatts or 30% of the system that's last accepted, whichever is larger. And that last point that I just made of having either 150 kilowatts or 30% of the last accepted system, whichever is larger, this is a change in the terms of the program, a small change that's really designed to make the application of the developer cap consistent with the fact that the board has now changed the maximum size allowable under the program from 500 kilowatts to 2 megawatts. A last note is that we will be applying the developer cap to each developer, whether or not the developer itself is submitting the proposal for the project. So as we mentioned when talking about eligibility, it could be the developer that submits the proposal, it could be a customer, it could be another related entity. Regardless of that, there's a developer that's named in the proposal, and we use that to apply the developer cap to the developer and all its affiliated entities. On slide 20, I'm going to go back to the notion of the NPV or net present value that's used to rank the bids. And there's an example here that's provided for JCP&L. In this example, you have a number of hypothetical projects that are submitting a bid price that's in the first column of the table on the top of the slide. So with prices from 375 down to 285 with different terms. So the pricing proposal has two components, the price, the duration, and you have both here in the table. The price, for example, on the first row of 375 with a term or duration for the contract of 10 years. The calculation of the NPV or net present value then, which is in the fourth column of that table, simply takes the price for that submitted in the proposal, the price per SREC, and multiplies it by a cumulative factor, and that gives you the NPV. And the cumulative factor that is there, 7.0660 for a term of 10 years, is the cumulative factor that is available in the RFP rules in a table that provides those cumulative factors for JCP&L, ACE, and for RICO. And that cumulative factor depends on the duration or term of the contract. So if you look at the cumulative factors, you see that they increase with the term or duration of the contract. And again, the NPV is going to be calculated very simply by taking the price times the factor. Now, in this table, numbers are rounded. So if you take the 375 and you multiply by 7.066, you're going to get something just a little under 2650. So it's 2650 in the table, rounded a little bit. Given that the factors increase as the duration or the term of the contracts increase, it means that to be competitive, a longer-term project, for example, a 15-year project, would need to provide a lower price per SREC. So in the example that's provided here, the lowest NPV is 2617 in the last row of the table, corresponding to a 15-year term, but corresponding to a price per SREC of 285, so lower than the prices that were submitted in this hypothetical example for shorter term projects. So you can make these calculations for any of these EDCs in the RFP rules. You have a table that is a more complete version of what you see on the bottom right of slide 20 that has the cumulative factor for JCP&L and ACE. It has those, but it also has the same data for RICO. So as I mentioned, the proposals, their bids are ranked according to the NPV. There is consideration of the developer cap and consideration of the competitiveness of the pricing and coming up with recommendations. And I will talk a little bit about the process of recommendations that are made by the solicitation manager on slide 21. So we use the ranking of the proposals that we will have done by the method that I just discussed. And we will use that in presenting preliminary recommendation to the parties. The parties here refer to the parties in the proceeding in front of the Board of Public Utility that yielded this program. And the parties specifically are the distribution companies, rate council, as well as staff from the board. So the solicitation manager, shortly after evaluation of the proposal is complete, presents preliminary recommendation to the parties, and the parties can then provide input on those recommendations. The solicitation manager then considers that input in forming final recommendation that will be provided in a report to the board. And that will include the competitiveness of the bids, recommendations for the award, recommendations for quantities in the next solicitation, as well as any special treatment for the small project segment. And this is in view of the fact that there are aspirational goals for the small project segment under this program. And just as a reminder, the small project segment is at 50 kilowatts and below. Ultimately, though, after the solicitation manager has presented recommendations, the final awards and those decisions are made by the board. Once the board has made its decision, and that will typically be at the next agenda meeting after the close of the solicitation, after the solicitation manager has presented its recommendation, then the board will make that decision, and the solicitation manager then notifies the bidders of that decision. We also make an announcement of the results. That doesn't include individual pricing, but it does include the number of bid received, the number of awards, the rejected bids, and also the pricing in terms of an average price and a low price. So no individual pricing, but some statistics regarding the pricing that was received. A couple of things to mention in the thinking about the post-bid process under this program. First is a new feature that Mr. Chi mentioned earlier in the presentation, namely that the EDC will provide successful proponents under the program a draft of the contract, so a draft of the SREC purchase and sale agreement after the board order has been issued. Now, the reason there's a change here is that the board order is subject to appeal for a period of 45 days, so nothing really can be signed and nothing can have legal effect and be final until that period of 45 days has expired. So once the board order is no longer subject to appeal after that 45-day period, the EDC then notifies the winning suppliers or the proponents under the program that have successful projects and starts the execution of the SREC PSA. Before then, though, as a convenience for proponents and that have successful projects under the program, the EDCs have agreed to provide a draft SREC PSA. Another change is that it can happen that the system, as will be built by a successful proponent under this program, may have a size that is a bit different from the size that was proposed under this program, that was included in the proposal under the program. As a new feature of the program, they're all small variations that will be allowed in system size. But there's some restrictions on those variations, the first being that the variation in system size can just be up to 10%. And again, it has to be 10%, but as long as really all the other requirements of the program are still met by the system. In particular, there has to be no change in the segment to which the project belongs. So either the small segment, 50 kilowatts or above, or the large project segment above 50 kilowatts, There has to be no change in the segment, and of course, it can't be that that increase or change in size means that the project is now above the limit in terms of size for the program. And that limit, again, has been increased from 500 kilowatts to 2 megawatts starting in this solicitation. So that's some points on the process after the evaluation of the proposals have been made. And in the next few slides, I'll just give you a bit of summary results and do a recap on the schedule for this upcoming solicitation. So there have been 5 solicitations held thus far, 3 in the RPS reporting year 2010, and you have the summary results of those solicitations on slide 22. As you see, during that year, we saw an increasing number in the bids that were received and an increasing number in terms of awards, and you have the pricing that's released as part of the information from the solicitation manager, which, as required by the stipulation, includes the average price as well as a low price. For 2011, we've had 2 solicitations so far, and the quantity that are being solicited in this round 6 solicitation are the leftover quantities that haven't been filled yet from round 4 and round 5. So we've had a number of bids that were received thus far this year, including 57 bids in round 5 and 55 awards in this last solicitation in round 5, and you have the prices there. All of those results are also on our website, and in particular for round 5 and also prior solicitations, there are additional details in terms of number of bids by segment that are available on our website. That is, bids divided into the small segment of 50 kilowatts and below and the large segment of above 50 kilowatts. On slide 24, as a reminder, as we've said, there are deadlines coming up for the solicitation. The deadline for the first step in the submission of the proposal, namely the EOI, is on Friday, February 11th, and the deadline for the pricing proposals and the qualification materials is the same, namely Thursday, February 17th at noon. Following those deadlines, just to give you a sense, because those dates really are tentative, but just to give you a sense of how things can proceed in the post-bid period, we would expect, given the timing of the bids for this solicitation, that we would present the preliminary recommendations to the parties Monday, February 28th. So that accounts for having the proposal on February 17th, evaluating the proposal, letting proponents that have items that they need to complete for their qualification material some time to do so, and for us to evaluate the bids. Preliminary recommendation on February 28th. The parties have roughly 10 days to provide input, and then the solicitation manager has a further 10 days to arrive at its final recommendation that it will then present to the board, with an expected board meeting sometime after that, an announcement of the results within a few days of the board meeting. The execution of the SRAC PSA, so again, that's the full execution, has to wait the 45 days so that the board order is no longer subject to appeal. So that would put it roughly at May 23rd. And of course, as we mentioned, the EDCs are now willing to provide a draft SREC PSA to successful proponents under this program ahead of the full execution of the SREC PSA. So all this timing is based on the number of days for various activities that are included in the stipulation that has been approved by the board. It's subject to change. It is tentative again. It could be that there are holidays, that there are various events that prevent us from completing the schedule exactly as shown here, or that may be that the schedule is a bit accelerated. We won't really know until a little bit later on, but we will certainly keep you informed of any change in the schedule. So that completes our formal presentation today. As mentioned in the invitation to the call, we have time for questions, and we will take them now.